Beyond the Dark on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Ladies and gentlemen, Beyond the Dark. What should we talk about tonight? Monster Hunter? Wow, there's a book out. We have to. That is where we're going. Let's speak to Neil Arnold. Hello, Neil.
Hello there.
What a fascinating book. Tell us about it.
Well, basically, everybody sort of has heard about sightings across the world of monsters. And I think that whether people believe or not in this kind of strange folklore, there's always been a need for mystery. But of course, people hear about more common sort of monsters such as Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster, which I've always been interested in since I was a child. But I decided I would write a book called Monster, the A to Z of Zoo Form Phenomena. Now, it's a bit complicated, but Zoo Form Phenomena simply covers creatures which aren't really flesh and blood, but which are creatures that for some reason are still seen across the world, which mainly sort of encompasses weird things such as phantom hellhounds and strange creatures like that, which clearly aren't flesh and blood creatures and are clearly not simply down to ghosts. These are something possibly demonic or possibly connected to the human psyche. So I decided I would delve into the sinister and write a book on it.
Now, first of all, I've got to ask, why? Why did you want to do this?
Because it's always been part of my life. Ever since I was around 9 years of age, I've been interested in local stories. I've never really been interested in sort of ghosts, but I've always tried to write highly original and sort of very atmospheric non-fiction stuff. And I've always collected reports of very strange creatures. Now, a lot of this comes under the bracket of cryptozoology, which is often an investigation into creatures that could be real or newly discovered species or undiscovered species. But I wanted to write a book that concentrated on monsters, true monsters that have never really been categorized. So zoo form phenomena was a term coined simply to categorize creatures or demonic entities that have animal kind of characteristics. So winged humanoids and red-eyed hellhounds and things like that, which people do see all over the world, but they're clearly not real kind of creatures, if you know what I mean.
Were you a little bit frightened when you started to get into writing the book and found things out?
No, I think that fear can either go both ways. It can either terrify you and you're never interested in it again, or it can inspire you to kind of, you know, be really interested in this kind of thing. And I believe that even as a kid that I loved all these stories, and I think a lot of children will enjoy the book as well, because it's kind of alphabetical, it's absolutely huge, but it's kind of little campfire kind of entries into strange creatures that have been seen across the world.
Did it take over your life while you were doing it?
It takes over my life anyway, because I'm literally a full-time monster hunter, which I don't think many people can really say that. A lot of people kind of say to me, yeah, but what's your real job? And they kind of don't really understand that it's actually what I do. So it is something that's very sort of time-consuming, but in a good way.
Do you actually put that down on your tax returns?
I put down also. I usually often talk about, yes, I'm a monster hunter, but I also conduct lectures on it as well. So it kind of goes into different things, writing for magazines and things like that.
You've got a book called Monster. I've got to ask the question, have you ever seen any form of monster?
No. Basically, because a lot of what I write about is, I think the supernatural is very interesting, but I find that a lot of these ghost hunters and ghost hunting programs never really touch upon supernatural creatures. And I do think that even with ghosts, that sometimes it's down to the individual. You know, I can ride around a dark, remote road for hours and hours, and you just know you're not going to see anything. I often believe that these more supernatural or paranormal kind of creatures are usually dependent on the witness. In other words, I don't think these creatures appear if there's no one there to see them. So then it often depends on that kind of person in that area at the time.
When you were writing the book, did you discover where these beings live? I mean, is there somewhere that we don't know about where there's loads of monsters?
No, I think what it is, if we start to blame the human psyche, of course, the brain and the mind are very different things. And of course, when we're asleep of a night, we go through all these weird kind of dreams and nightmares. But I believe that these things have existed for thousands of years. We've only got to look at ancient reports of harpies and dragons. And yet, of course, people say that dragons don't exist, but for some reason they've become embedded in folklore across the world. And a dragon is a perfect example of a zoo-form creature, because people have seen dragons in Sussex and Essex and, of course, across the world in Africa and China, but they don't really exist as such. So a zoo-form can kind of be of some of many parts, and it's important to kind of say these animals don't necessarily live in the woods, because they're not real. But of course, the woods is the kind of place that we put them, because it's the kind of dark, it's the unknown.
So while you were doing the research on the book, did you meet people that did meet these monsters?
There are thousands of people across the world who've had absolutely bizarre things happen to them, whether it's somebody walking along a dimly lit road of a night and they see an absolutely monstrous hellhound which has got fiery eyes and it completely disappears. And this hound is simply not the deceased pet of some old lady up the road. It's something very odd, possibly an omen of doom is what they often say. You've also got people such as in Africa that experience these night terrors where they're asleep of a night and these things come in the room. And these things can range from kind of bizarre sort of entities resembling bat-winged babies or bizarre demonic kind of vampire-like apparitions. And of course, over the years, vampires have become sensationalised because of Hollywood. But there seems to be some kind of truth in some of these reports if you go back thousands of years.
I'm talking to Neil Arnold. He's got a book out called Monster. Tell me, Neil, are they scary? I mean, has anybody that you spoke to or anybody you've had dealings with actually been physically hurt by these monsters?
Yeah, well, again, it really depends how you look at these kind of things. But when you look at, there is something in India, which I looked into called the Monkey Man. And this Monkey Man was said to be about 5 foot high, completely covered in hair with huge claws. And what it would do, it would come in the night and it would attack people. It would bite their skull, scratch their face. But I think that a lot of this becomes hysterical. And once you get the media involved, let's put it this way. If you believe in something enough, I actually believe it can start to happen. And I believe this has happened with a lot of things. And as we know, with something like the Loch Ness Monster, you know, I think the Loch Ness Monster is probably a very large catfish. But it, obviously, calling it the Loch Ness Catfish will not sell T-shirts. So they've got to call it the Loch Ness Monster. So people start to believe there's this huge monstrous creature in Loch Ness, which of course is impossible. But once it's embedded in folklore, it becomes almost real. And that's what a lot of these other creatures kind of do. So they almost take on a form.
Tell me, do these monsters in your research, do you know whether they live in harmony with the spirit world?
I think, again, it's all down to perception of what we believe is the spirit world. I think that there are nature spirits. You know, many, many years ago, children often believed in fairies at the bottom of the garden, or they believed in monsters in the closet. And whether you look at the Tooth Fairy, or you look at the Sandman, or Father Christmas, these are all folkloric bogeymen type of creatures. So I believe that these are things that have always been with us. Maybe over the years they alter as society alters, so we kind of shape them unintentionally without realizing it. So I believe these things have always been there. You know, in the UK we get bizarre sightings of woodland creatures that are kind of 6 to 7 feet tall, covered in hair. These can't exist. We don't have any primates in the UK, but we've often had this creature many years ago called the Woodwoser, or Wild Man of the Woods, and this is a nature spirit. So not everybody sees these on a weekly basis, but there's always somebody out there that seems something weird, and not everybody is a liar. Lots of people are very sure as to what they're seeing.
Now, you mentioned the Loch Ness Monster. Let's talk about two other big names, Bigfoot and the Abominable Snowman. What's your opinion and take on those two?
Right, well, the Abominable Snowman is a very, very bad name because, of course, it's just a name that was completely sort of made up and confused a lot of people. There is fossil evidence to support the fact there was once a large upright walking primate. This was called Gigantopithecus. Now, the bizarre thing is with Bigfoot, which belongs to the Pacific Northwest, and the Abominable Snowman or Yeti, which of course belongs to the Himalayas, is that these things seem to exist all over the world in the more remote regions, whether it's China or parts of Africa and even Australia, where they've got a similar creature called the Yowie. I actually believe that Bigfoot, if we looked into it, is possibly a real creature. And the reason I say this, before anybody starts thinking I'm completely mad, is the fact that if you realise that the mountain gorilla was only discovered over a sort of a century or so ago, and folklore used to speak of this man that came out of the woods and beat his chest, and everybody laughed until they shot one. And of course, you know, things such as the giant panda is quite a recent discovery. I believe that there's still enough remote areas in the world, certainly to hide an undiscovered species of upright walking ape. But the problem is, of course, once it's embedded in legend, you know, most people believe the Abominable Snowman is white. There's never ever been a report of a white creature in the Himalayas. It's got dark brown fur and it lives down by the rhododendron kind of areas. But before people start again thinking I'm completely mad, there is another creature in Sumatra called the Orang Pendek. And very recently, a group of friends of mine who belong to the Center for Fortean Zoology, they went out to Sumatra and they found hares. And these hares have been analysed, and at the moment, it seems that we're dealing with something that resembles an orangutan, but it walks upright. There are no orangutans in that area. They belong about 300 miles away, so there is clearly something out there in the woods which I believe people are seeing.
What do people who run zoos think of a book like Monster?
I don't usually ask them, to be honest with you. I think that zoologists and scientists sometimes can be quite naive or a little bit too affected by their job and their position, and they worry that mentioning these kind of animals could possibly sort of not, you know, damage their careers. Now, of course, monsters is a very different, you know, kettle of fish to an extent, because for me to talk about bizarre monsters is one thing, but there are certain creatures which I know for a fact exist in the world, such as so-called big cats in the UK, which I've researched for more than 20 years, and a lot of zoologists won't even like to admit these animals exist, but these are not monsters. There's no real mystery as to why there are big cats in the UK.
Do you find it interesting, Neil, that we don't really explore the ocean beds and there must be some untold wealth of unusual creatures down there?
Exactly. Well, the ocean is probably the most likely place to find what we class as a monster. Of course, we get lake monster and sea serpent reports. But of course, what we seem to, you know, not realise is the fact that most of this is unexplored. We've got, you know, a huge fish called the coelacanth, which was rediscovered, you know, not long ago, and that's actually been allegedly extinct for millions of years. There are also reports of giant squid. Now, we know for a fact that giant squid grow to colossal kind of lengths because they've actually found the sucker marks on the sperm whales. But nobody has ever truly found a real monstrous giant squid, yet they exist. And of course, the deeper you go in the oceans, the weirder things get, and it's more inaccessible for us.
I'm talking to Neil Arnold. He's got a book out called Monster. You've got to tell us, tease us now. Give us five of the monsters in your book.
Okay, well, one of the weirdest ones, but of course one of the most well-known, is called Mothman. Mothman sounds like some kind of anti-hero from a comic book, but this is a creature that was seen in West Virginia in the United States in the 1960s, and people described seeing this huge winged humanoid sort of covered in hair with red eyes. At the same time, there was lots of other weirdness going on in the area, and people were really seeing this creature. I believe it was the product of hysteria, media influence, but also something else, because it was often seen around an area known as the Silver Bridge, which eventually collapsed and killed 47 people. Around the same time, this winged creature was seen. People believe it was some kind of bad omen. There was another creature in the USA called the Jersey Devil, which has existed for several centuries in the Pine Barrens, which is a vast wilderness, and this creature is said to resemble something akin to a dragon or a small kind of deer-like creature with leathery wings. We've also got the Goatman in the USA as well, which is very spooky. This is said to be like a satyr type of creature, like a half-man, half-goat kind of weird creature. Then you start getting more comical, and there's another one in America called the Bunny Man, which was said to be a bizarre kind of reclusive kind of figure that used to slaughter rabbits and then used to wear their kind of skins around its body. But bizarrely, there is actually a story from about sort of 50 or so years ago of a guy dressed up in a bunny suit that used to attack cars with an axe in the area. So it's quite a funny story. But in the UK, of course, we have phantom hellhounds, which can vary from the colour black, particularly around areas such as Norfolk and, you know, around East Anglia. But of course, these exist all over the world. And these things are all over the world, you know, whether it's kind of these winged humanoids we've got in Africa, we've got these bizarre Malaysian vampire kind of monsters which are said to detach their head overnight and the head floats around and then it sits on top of a property and with a straw-like tongue it protrudes down through the cracks in the building and sucks the blood from victims. And the most weird one, which has been around more recently, is on the island of Puerto Rico, and that is called the goat sucker or the chupacabra. And this is a small or reptilian type of creature which is said to drink the blood of goats and cows. But these things exist all over the world and there are absolutely thousands of them, so it makes you wonder if they've always been here.
Neil Arnold, you're a fascinating man. He's a full-time monster hunter. The book's called Monster. How can they find the book?
Well, basically you can get it on Amazon. It's, like I say, it's Monster, the A to Z of Zooform Phenomena. I've got a website, zooform.blogspot.com. bookshop.com, but it's available, should be, you know, on all the big sort of bookshops online.
Neil Arnold, thank you for talking to us.
Thank you.
Liverpool's biggest after-hours talk show, Late Night City, with Pete Price on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.